it's time to get ready for a journey into the love of art and the art of love. Welcome to Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon, the show that takes an honest look into the heart of all things that shape the fabric of your entire life. And now, here's Nancy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, and thanks for joining us. I'm Nancy Murdoch, and you are listening to episode number 3. People have sent me some great questions this week that I'm going to have a lot of fun answering for you. If you have questions you want answered, I'll tell you how to make that happen a little bit later in the show. In episode number 1, I answered an email from Scared Mama, who asked me the best way to tell her parents she was pregnant. If you are pregnant and haven't told your parents or in-laws yet, you might want to go back and listen to that show. And if you are a parent, maybe you could learn a thing or two from this young woman in order to get closer to your own daughter. Anyway, Scared Mama wrote back to me this week. She said, "Dear Nancy, I couldn't wait to hear your answer on the show because I was visiting my parents over the holidays and needed to tell them. I was really surprised with Mom's reaction to the baby, actually. I told Dad first, but I was so scared that I didn't show I was excited. He said he still loved me and it was okay, and then he went to bed. And then he came into my room in the middle of the night and was crying and gave me a hug and said we would get through it. It was like I had a deadly disease. So I was really sad about that. So then the next day, my sister and I went to my mom's and I said I had some news, and she was like, 'Oh no, you're getting married, aren't you?' And had this super stressed look. And I'm like, 'Oh crap, this is going to be worse.' So then I said, 'No, I wasn't getting married.' And she brightened right up and was like, 'You're having a baby,' and was all excited. And we both cried a little, but it was happy tears. She asked how I was feeling and if I'm eating properly and getting enough exercise. She wanted to know when the baby is due and if I have morning sickness and if there is anything she can do to help, and that she wished she lived closer. She wanted to know if I had any names picked out. Mom was very supportive. And I told her Dad's reaction, and she said it was probably because I didn't show I was happy about it, just like you said. So I went back to Dad's and retold him the way Mom suggested, which was pretty much like you suggested, being happy, and said, 'Dustin and I were really excited, and I laid out my plan for him so he knew I wasn't dropping out of school, etc. A little while ago, Dad bought me some baby clothes, so I think he's getting more used to the idea.' I told Grandma on the phone, and she asked if I had gotten married, LOL. I said no. She said I should. And I said, 'It's a little late. I'm already pregnant, LOL. Mom talked to her after that, and it wasn't because of the Bible. She just wanted to make sure I was protected legally. But we are common law anyways, and neither of us owns anything, LOL. So we would both be just as poor if we split up. I find that with a lot of guys, though, when you say you're pregnant, they take a step back, like it's contagious. It was so funny. And OMG, this made me mad. After I had made my Facebook announcement about it, people were calling Dad to congratulate him. What the fuck? What did he do? Nothing. I'm growing it, and they didn't even comment on my post to congratulate me as well. Just call Dad. If any extended person should be congratulated, it should be Mom, because she made me. It's a very confusing situation as to why Dad has anything to do with this. I feel like a lot of people still think I'm young. My friends at school are all concerned for me, but they are 18 and 19, so I think they are looking at it as if I were their age. But I'm not really concerned about anything. I know Dustin will be a super good dad, and I love kids, and I know I will be fine. Money is always an issue, but it's an issue all through life, so it's all good. I think Grandma is worried that Dustin will leave me because of the baby. And then now I have a baby and no support and no money. But honestly, he is more excited about it than I am. Always worried about what I can eat and do and when our appointments are and looking into prenatal classes. So I'm not worried. And even if he did leave, I'd figure it out. I think Grandma thinks we are more protected if we are married, and that is not always the case. Talk to you again soon. Signed, Millie, a.k.a. Scared Mama." That is excellent news, Millie. Thanks for letting us know how it went. I'm glad your dad is coming around and the rest of your family is being supported, or at least somewhat. I think they're all out for your own well-being, and, you know, they just show it in a different way. It's good to know you're not stressed about it anymore and you're enjoying your pregnancy. That will do wonders for birthing a happy, healthy baby. I don't know why people are congratulating your dad. The universe works in strange ways that we will probably never fully understand. As you predicted, he wasn't very confident about the whole thing to begin with. Maybe he needs the positive accolades more than you do. All those people are telling him, hey, this is very cool. You get to be a proud grandfather. It's okay. He's on his own journey and you are on yours. It's not your job to make your dad or anyone feel better. It's enough work for all of us to manage our own emotions. When we speak from our truth, from a place of confidence, there is a certain energy about us that radiates our inner conviction and strength to others. You know, it makes it harder for people to mess with us when we're confident and strong. I'm sure everyone has experienced it at some point in their lives. It's a feeling that is so solid and grounded. This is a place we need to come from whenever we speak to anyone about anything, especially things that are important to us. So thank you very much for sharing, Millie. For anyone who has questions and can't wait to have them answered on air, I have an email consultation service where I respond quickly. I'll tell you more about that later in the show. The first question for today is from Irritated Allie. Dear Nancy, how do I not let someone else affect me? Their actions, their noises. How do I ensure that my sister not finishing her essay doesn't affect me? If my boyfriend has a bad day, how can I not let that affect me? I need total silence. I get angry and stare at that noise and can't focus on something else. How do I ensure that the random person next to me doesn't affect me? How do I bubble myself? In the library, there are no talking zones, but someone is always talking. I give them the evil silencer stare, but it doesn't work. I try shushing them, but they don't shush, and they'd shush for 5 minutes and start up again. I get up and move, but it happens constantly, not just once or twice. I feel rage inside and have to leave because it gets to that level. My only answer is to isolate myself. I can't stand someone eating beside me or slurping his coffee or chewing his gum with his mouth open. I can't be around people. I can't live like this anymore. Signed, Irritated Allie. I know exactly what you mean, Allie, and how exasperatingly irritating it can be. I am so sorry that you are experiencing annoyances to the point that it is disrupting your studies and your ability to have a pleasurable experience when you're around other people. The problem is, people are always going to do irritating things whether we like it or not. Even if you're in a no-talk zone, people are going to talk, as you are very well aware. We can't change them. But I have a few suggestions that may help. Sometimes, not always, but in some cases, it's helpful to get to the core of what caused this condition in the first place. Understanding brings awareness. And once we have awareness, healing is just a breath away, literally a breath. Breath is so powerful. We can breathe these irritants out of our lives. Annoyances often stem from being shaken out of your safe zone or being too stuck in your comfort zone. We all have habits and patterns that make us feel safe. It sounds like any type of minor disturbance makes you feel unsafe. When I say unsafe, I don't mean that your life is in danger and you're afraid of being harmed. It's not at that level. But if this continues, it could very easily get to that level. So let's deal with it before it gets that far. You are disturbed when your sister doesn't finish her schoolwork and when you can't study peacefully, to the point where you are enraged. And when the significant male figure in your life, your boyfriend, is in a bad mood, you are adversely affected. I'm guessing your boyfriend is a lot like your dad. It may sound cliche, but relationships are opportunities to heal so that we can grow. And more times than not, the guys we fall in love with generally represent something about our relationship with our dad that was left unresolved. Unresolved emotional issues result in some type of dis-ease or disturbance later in life. I think your current situation stems from something in your childhood. Maybe you were taught to honor other people, to eat with proper etiquette, to respect the rules of being in a public place. All those things made you feel peaceful and quiet inside. And I'm guessing your learning environment was also peaceful until it was disturbed. Here's the piece of the puzzle you will have to solve. And when you do, you will find great relief. Somehow, something your dad did shattered your peace, and it had to do with school, or when you and your sister were studying or doing your reports or essays. Maybe that was a really blissful time for you. You felt safe and happy doing your homework. Somehow or other, your dad created a disturbance in your routine. or your values clashed with his values. They could be any values, like proper table manners, his beliefs about education, how he valued you as a student, as a daughter, how he treated you and your sister. Did your dad interrupt your studies in some way? It didn't have to be an interruption in a negative way. The people chewing gum and talking in the library recently probably weren't doing it to intentionally bug you. They were probably oblivious to your existence and your presence entirely. No offense, but most people are in their own worlds and not really paying attention to what's going on around them, where they are, or who else is in the vicinity. From what I understand, in the way that you stated your question, they weren't maliciously talking about you or making faces and pointing at you while they crunched their chips. So whatever your dad did, it wasn't necessarily malicious. But it could have been, since you said you are affected by your boyfriend's bad mood. Although that may be totally unrelated and have more to do with being an empath, where you pick up other people's energy. But maybe it was, you know, maybe there was something passive-aggressive that your dad did to interrupt your peaceful school time. As a child, you probably didn't have the tools or vocabulary, and maybe even the permission, to address the issue in a healthy manner. Did you ever run to your room so angry you just cried? That was your protective bubble, your safe zone. Look back to the times you isolated yourself and try to remember why. What were you feeling during those times? Why did you feel unsafe? Our experiences come and go, but our emotional reactions remain locked in our cell tissues forever, or until we resolve them. Like Miguel Ruiz says, we need to open the wounds, clean out the poison, then heal it back up again. Until we clean out the emotional wounds, we will continue to attract people and situations in our lives that play out those experiences we've buried. But people wear different costumes and have different bodies, but it's the same emotional wound being lived out over and over and over again. The way to clean out the wound is to bring it into conscious awareness. Some type of disturbance shattered that peace for you and made you feel unsafe. It's your job to find out exactly what it was. I remember many, many years ago, I was waiting for a friend who was in an interview. He was going to be a couple hours, so I went to the local library and sat in the quiet section and attempted to read a book. The people around me were moving, coughing, chit-chatting. I read the same sentence over and over and over and over again and never did know what it said. I eventually gave up, closed the book, and just sat there. A man who was sitting across from me said that if I learned to meditate, I would be able to read without being distracted by outside noises. I was too irritated to appreciate his wisdom at that time, but I remember him being very calm, with a serene air about him, like nothing ever disturbed him. It wasn't until years later that I actually started to meditate. One spring day, I was meditating in my bedroom with the window open, and I could hear the birds chirp. It sounded nice. Then a big transport went by, then a police car with a siren blaring, then normal traffic. I was distracted by every noise, and I didn't hear the sweet sound of the birds chirping anymore. Until something in me realized this was just a symphony. It wasn't Mozart or Beethoven. It was a universal symphony of life where all sorts of different instruments played their sounds together. When I saw it as a symphony, I didn't see them as random sounds interfering with the sweet melody of the chirping birds anymore. It was all about perspective. Your question isn't, how can I see it differently? That'd be easy. The symphony you're listening to is made up of gum chewing, potato chip crunching, drink slurping, and a chorus of talking and shushing. How do you not let that affect you? Well, first off, it's affecting you because you are focused on it. What you focus on expands. You intentionally or unintentionally create more of it. If you are focused on disturbance, you create more disturbances, more talkers, gum chewers, dog barking, and people eating food in all sorts of noisy ways. If you focus on something outside yourself, you have given your power away to all those outside forces that are affecting you. They chomp and chew, your blood pressure rises. Their behavior isn't affecting them, it's affecting you. Call back your power, woman. Don't let anyone else dictate how you get to feel. You are the only one who gets to choose how you feel. Right now, you are choosing to feel irritated and angry, which is snowballing into making you want to isolate yourself from the world. The answer isn't isolation, it's meditation. That's probably not the answer you wanted to hear because it's a skill that requires time, dedication, and discipline. It's not a quick fix solution that's going to make people stop behaving badly in public places, or a magic pill that's going to make you not hear them. But it's a lasting solution, and I guarantee that once you start practicing on a regular basis, you will notice a change in yourself and maybe even the people around you. It's the self-bubble you're looking for. It's the only self-bubble that actually works long-term. Meditation helps you focus on what you want to focus on. It brings you clarity of mind and singleness of purpose. It helps you develop peace and serenity inside where you need it. When you are at peace, it doesn't matter what kind of chaos is going on around you, you will not be affected by it. You gain back your power to choose where you want to focus, on the distractions or on your studies, and how you want to feel, irritated or blissful. It helps you develop your ability to accept all people and situations. One misconception about meditation is that it takes years to reap any benefits from it. That is so not true. You can feel the difference immediately after your first meditation, and it just keeps getting better and better after that. Meditation has many layers of benefits. Yogis who have meditated for 20 or 30,000 hours are obviously going to have deeper, more profound benefits. It's like learning any new skill. It requires practice to get good at it. And it's not hard, it just takes a little bit of effort. Right now, you are living outside yourself. Meditation helps you get grounded and back into your own skin. You will no longer be a victim to your boyfriend's bad day. You will be connected to your own essence, your own truth, the way you want to feel. You can notice other people's bad mood if you choose to, but it won't affect you. The more you practice, the more grounded you will be in your own authentic self. It won't matter what anyone does or says. It will take something super duper major to knock you off your game. Now, for some immediate relief to help you get through your studies and your daily life, here are a few other things that will also work. Deep breathing. When you first start noticing the distraction, stop whatever you are doing and do slow, deep breathing for 2 minutes. Belly breathing. According to all the enlightened masters, deep breathing heals all. Focus on your breath coming in and going out. This will bring you back to center. It will slow down the cortisol that is about to start coursing through your body, sending you into fight flight. If you can't focus on your breath, try intentionally focusing on the chewing or the talking. Anything can lead you into meditation. So one day there was this man who went to sit in a cave by the ocean to meditate. He was distracted by the sounds of nature around him. As night came, the waves got bigger and bigger, louder and louder, distracting him more and more. So he decided to focus on the sound of the waves. They crashed and the wind howled. In the middle of the night, he was swept away by them. He became part of them. He couldn't tell the difference between himself and the waves. When morning came, he found himself sitting in the cave in the same position as he had entered it the night before. The waves had subsided and he wasn't even wet. We can use anything to lead us into meditation, even the sounds that are disturbing you. Isolation is the feeling of exclusion. Meditation is the path to inclusion. Right now, you are feeling separate from the students who are making noises. You're feeling separate from your distractions. When we realize that everything, literally everything, comes from our own minds, we begin to understand that there is no separation or division. It's all an illusion. When you can somehow see that those noises, all sounds, all disturbances are part of you, like the union of the waves and the man, it won't bother you anymore. Have you ever been so still you can hear and feel your own heartbeat? The sound is generated from inside your own mind. Yes, it's coming from your body, but you are hearing it because you are focused on it. Same with the sounds of the chewing of the gum and the talking and all the other disturbances. They are coming from within your own mind, even though they appear to have an external source. Sending out the death glare is a fight-flight reaction, and it doesn't work, as you clearly know. It's a passive-aggressive body language that's coming right back at you from the people you're glaring at. Learn to let it go and practice focusing on things that are important to you. Life is filled with little irritants. If we let them eat up all of our life force energy, we will have very little left over for the things that really matter to us. My next suggestion is to identify exactly what is bothering you. Is it really about other people chewing? Or is it some underlying issue inside that is unresolved? Often the reason we find other people annoying is because it reflects back to us something we don't like about ourselves. We don't want to believe that's who we are, and we certainly don't think that we ever exhibit that type of behavior. but there is something there that is hitting too close to home for you. Find out what it is. So, Irritated Allie, if you decide to take my advice and start a meditation practice, be sure to let me know if there's any way I can help. Okay, we're going to take a real short break and be back for the next question. If you have questions about love, life, relationships, happiness, health, and well-being, please email them to me at nancy@nancyatnoon.com. And maybe yours will be the ones chosen to be answered on air. If you need answers now, I provide a personal and private email consultation service. For details, please visit the Ask Nancy page on my website, nancyatnoon.com. And now it's time for another Daily Ditty.
Hey, it's Haley, and it's time for Fun Facts of the Day. So, here's a good one. I love this. I think it's so cute. Sea otters hold hands when they sleep to keep from drifting apart. When you were born, you were, for a moment, the youngest person on Earth. So we were all very special at one minuscule moment. The elements that we are composed of were formed in the interiors of collapsing stars. So we are all made of stardust. Isn't that magical? Macaques in Japan, which is a type of monkey, use coins to buy vending machine snacks. So they're pretty smart. In Norway, a penguin was knighted. A flamingo can only eat when its head is upside down. And the voices of Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse got married in real life. I think that's super cute. And this is a nice one, but also kind of sad. A prison in Washington pairs up death row shelter cats with select inmates as a part of rehabilitation program. It seems to be a pretty wonderful thing for both the inmates and the cats. And that's really sweet. Sad that they're both on death row, but it's sweet that they get to be together. Gen 2 penguins propose to their life mates with a pebble, and they spend days picking out the right one. And when playing with female puppies, male puppies will often let them win, even if they have a physical advantage. That's sweet. Cows can sleep standing up, but they can only dream when they're laying down. The sentence, "The quick brown fox jumps over a lazy dog," uses every letter in the alphabet. Does it actually? Oh, it does! Ha! Alligators can live up to 100 years, and a single elephant tooth can weigh as much as 9 pounds. Well, those have been your fun facts of the day.
All right, we are back, and I'm ready to answer the second question of today. Dear Nancy, I hope my question is appropriate. I was raised in a very conservative home and town, and everyone here is churched. I haven't attended a church service in nearly 2 years. I am by far the happiest, most connected, and spiritually aware that I have ever been. My question is, what do I tell people when they ask me that uncomfortable question about where I attend church or why I do not? Thank you and much love. Signed, Angela from Austin. Hello, Angela from Austin. I love your question. It's specific to people who ask you about church, but it covers the difficulty we all encounter for every uncomfortable question people ask us in life in all areas. Friends, family, acquaintances, and even total strangers ask us things that are none of their damn business. But being women and being raised to be polite to everyone, we often tend to ignore our own needs, the need for personal privacy. And we feel obligated to answer their questions because it's the polite thing to do. Well, it may be the polite thing to do, but no matter how we answer those uncomfortable questions, it doesn't leave us feeling better because by answering, we've broken a trust with ourselves. We went against what we know to be in our best interest. We shared personal and private information that we did not want to share. You can never feel good when you break a trust with yourself. The thing is, at first glance, we don't always recognize these questions as a personal breach of self-trust. Why not? Because the general topic is so mainstream public. Why shouldn't you answer a question about church? Because you decided this information is personal and private to you, and you don't want to share it with that person. Otherwise, the question wouldn't be uncomfortable, would it? If someone asked you what you had for lunch today, you might be glad to share your menu with them. But someone who is on a diet and very conscious of their weight, or someone who didn't have enough food or money to eat lunch today, might feel they have been put in a very uncomfortable position by that question because of the state of their finances or their intention to lose weight. It's personal and private to them. Every question could potentially be uncomfortable for someone. And the person asking doesn't live inside your head, so they have no way of knowing, unless you tell them. So, if you are feeling uncomfortable by a question being asked of you, take a step back and ask yourself why. What buttons are being pushed? Do you feel you will be judged, ridiculed, made to feel like you are doing wrong, a sinner? Do you feel threatened in some way? Like I told Irritated Allie, we can't change other people. It's up to us to decide how we are going to respond to all situations. The next thing to do is to look at the judgments you harbor within yourself about yourself and others. Everything is a reflection of our own state of being, providing us the opportunity to move beyond our own limitations. Most of us have a difficult time saying, "It's none of your damn business." And most of the time, there's no call to be that rude. Being a politician and avoiding the question altogether gets tiring. So how about saying something like, "I appreciate your interest in the way I practice my faith, or in my dietary choices, or the way I'm raising my child, or the man I've chosen as my life partner. But this topic is personal and private to me. You probably have things in your own life that you don't want to share with others, so I know you will understand. If you want to know why I'm so happy, connected, and spiritually aware, I'd love to tell you all about it sometime." Responding like that is going to take a little courage at the beginning. It's hard to stand up for ourselves when we've been taught to please everyone else first. But each time you do it, it becomes easier. Then one day you realize how much you've grown. The questions no longer feel uncomfortable. Try it and let me know how it goes. That's all we have time for in this episode. Thank you, Millie, Allie, and Angela. You've given us all lots to think about. If you have questions, send them to me at nancy@nancyatnoon.com, and maybe yours will be chosen to be answered on air. Until next time, keep it real.
Thanks for joining us again on Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. We've enjoyed your company and hope it's been fun for you too. If you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends and family because, well, they might like us too. You can find us online at nancyatnoon.com. We've got fascinating blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, coaching programs, art, jewelry, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Go ahead and check us out. NancyAtNoon.com. You'll be glad you did. It's time to get ready for a journey into the love of art and the art of love. Welcome to Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon, the show that takes an honest look into the heart of all things that shape the fabric of your entire life. And now, here's Nancy.
Hello, how you doing out there today? I'm your host, Nancy Murdoch, and you are listening to episode number 4. We're just rocking and rolling along into this new year. I have a great show for you today, and later in the show, Caitlin Trepanier will be joining me to tell us all about the importance of developing the life skill R-E-S-P-E-C-T, 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 as Aretha Franklin says, and she's going to tell us a little bit about how respect has dramatically improved her life. Before we get started, if you have a question you want answered, you can send it to me at nancy@nancyatnoon.com. And maybe it will be chosen to be answered on air. If you can't wait, that's okay too. I have a really cool email consultation service that is affordable and not just custom tailored to your needs. You also receive your response in a very timely manner, so you can put the guidance to use immediately.
Yippee!
All right, our first question today is from Joe. Joe writes, "Dear Nancy, one of my biggest how the fuck does it work quests is food and health, and what confuses me the most is the idea that you create your own reality, but some foods are bad for your health. With most teachers, there's just conflicting messages, like with Abraham and Bashar, but then the biggest one is Teal Swan, who maintains that meat lowers your vibration, and also a quote, 'I have never met anyone who could handle dairy, even if they think they can,' unquote. So then what's all this about beliefs? I think there is a bias there." Signed, Joe. Well, Joe, thank you for verbalizing what most of us health-conscious individuals are thinking every time we make something to eat. What is the truth about food? There is so much conflicting information, we don't know what to believe anymore. But I have some answers that will put you on the right track and hopefully eliminate the mystery and confusion. A few years ago, I was in the same confused state that you are in now. I was reading and hearing so much conflicting information. Eat this, don't eat that, this is good, this is bad. I said, enough! I need to know the truth about what to eat once and for all. When we make an intention, especially an emotionally charged intention that is infused with determination, the answer usually shows up on our doorstep in a very timely manner. That's exactly what happened for me. I found my answer at an ashram that was a couple hours outside of Montreal. I stayed there for, I don't know, about a month, give or take, and I have not had any confusion whatsoever about how to nourish myself or my family since that experience, because what I learned made total sense to me. Here's the skinny. The purpose of food is to build and nourish the body. That's all. In order to know what to eat, you need to know your body and pay attention to your body's needs. Our bodies are made up of earth, water, fire, air, and space, or ether. All food is made up of the same five elements. You are what you eat, literally. Each of us consists of different proportions of these five elements, but when you know your unique constitution, you will know what to eat in order to bring balance to your physical body. The best foods for human consumption are the simplest foods because they pass through the digestive system the fastest. Simple foods consist of a plant-based diet of fruits and vegetables. More complex foods take longer to break down and often don't break down 100%. It should only take about 2.5 hours to pass through your digestive system once you've had a meal. When foods don't break down, they create toxins in your body. Toxins are the main cause of disease. And since these toxins need to be eliminated from the body, it takes energy away from you, creating fatigue and lethargy, which is the complete opposite of why you are eating in the first place. Simple foods have less complex cellular memory. Humans have the most complex cellular memory. So, foods that are the farthest away from humans are the best foods to eat for your physical body. For instance, a carrot will go through your digestive process faster than a cow. Let's talk about that for a minute. A cow, a crow, and a snake are the closest to the evolution of the human soul. A crow is very close to a human because of its higher intelligence, its ability to use tools, and its sophisticated social behavior. A snake is closest to the inner process of the human being, the way we vibrate, our vibrational frequency, in other words. A snake has the highest sense of perception. It knows the slightest change that is happening with the planet long before any human knows because it is so connected with the ground, with the earth. Many religions teach that the snake is Satan, but in India it represents Kundalini energy or the rising of consciousness. And cows have emotions that are closest to that of a human being. If you sit with a cow and talk to him about your problems or your pain, the cow will shed tears, literally shed tears. It's about recognizing the qualities that are in nature and being aware of your own qualities. Since you probably aren't going to include crow or snake in your diet, let's look at the cow. Since a cow has complex cellular memory, you will not be able to fully digest it. Thus, it putrefies faster than other foods in your digestive system, and creates toxins in the body, setting a ripe environment for disease, since toxins create disease. All foods have qualities, and it's important to know the inherent qualities of the food you eat, just like it's important to know the qualities of your body. For example, a carrot has the qualities of being sweet, bitter, and astringent in taste, and it has a cooling effect on the body. An orange has the qualities of being sweet, sour, and heating, which means it creates heat in the body. It's also heavy, promotes appetite, and is more difficult to digest. Meat has the inherent qualities of being dull, heavy, and thick. You asked why meat lowers your vibration? Well, there are several reasons, actually. One reason, because it contains fear. The animals waiting to be slaughtered know what's happening. I mean, don't assume that they don't know. They know they are going to be killed, and they are terrified, just like you would be if you were put in that position. They're probably feeling hatred towards the humans who are slaughtering them, too. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you? Remember that I said that animals have emotions? Well, you are consuming those emotions whether you believe it or not. I'm not even talking about the hormones, chemicals, and drugs with which these animals are injected. Also, meat today is of very poor quality because it's taken from animals who get very little, if any, exercise. Lack of exercise means the toxins don't get flushed out of the cell tissues of the animal. They're all there waiting for you, baby. You're eating all those chemicals and drug-producing toxins and the fear toxins. That alone should make you choose a different diet. The greater the violence in collecting our food, the more anger, hatred, and violence within yourself and in society. Fear and hatred are lower vibrations, as you probably know. So however you consume these emotions, they will affect your own vibration. But here's a cool fact. In India, cooks are often selected according to their devoutness, so that while they are cooking the food, there is more chance that uplifting vibrations will be transferred to that food. So if those aren't enough facts to make you stop eating meat and poultry, look inward to your own sense of compassion and empathy. You have to decide what you are going to eat and not going to eat according to your own set of values and intuition. If you feel you are in genuine need of meat for your health, the yogis recommend eating meat of animals that have died of natural causes because of their spiritually uplifting nature of nonviolence and because of the intense karmic responsibility you must bear for causing animal suffering through hunting or slaughter or participating in eating slaughtered animals. It always comes back to personal responsibility. And remember, when you are eating the energy of anger, fear, even to the point of terror, injustice, inhumanity, and aggression, you will emit the energy of those negative qualities. You may be able to keep yourself in check, but what you emit vibrationally is what you attract back. So when people are rude to you, treat you unfairly, yell at you for no reason, cut in front of you in line at the supermarket, or cut you off in traffic, you may want to take a very probing look at what is going on within you that is attracting this type of reaction from others. A couple other no-nos are foods that are frozen, canned, processed, or fried. These foods have no nutritional value whatsoever. They leach the energy right out of your body. Let's talk a little bit about raw versus cooked. Raw foods contain more nutrition than cooked foods, that's true, but it's not a question of which have the most nutrients. It's about how much of those nutrients you are able to assimilate. If you can't assimilate them, they become toxins. It's much more difficult for us to break down raw food in order to make use of it in our bodies. Whereas cooked foods lose some of their nutrients in the cooking process, but they are so much easier to digest and assimilate. So generally, we utilize more of the nutrients in cooked foods. Not overcooked, just cooked right. Like Goldilocks and the bed that was not too hard, not too soft, just right. So anyway, once you know your constitution, whether you are composed mostly of air and space, fire and water, or water and earth, and you know the qualities of foods, you will have the knowledge to choose foods that complement and balance your body's particular needs. Another part of your question was about creating our own realities about food. Some yogis can eat or drink poison and it won't affect them, because the other part of the food equation is that you are eating the beliefs contained in food all the way from the person who plants, nurtures, harvests, transports, sells, and cooks the food. And you are consuming the beliefs that you hold about food. So if you believe an apple, for instance, is bad for you, it will be. If you believe you get diabetes from eating too much sugar, then you will. Abraham Hicks says, drink all the water you can get in you, then eat what you like. That's great advice if you have no beliefs about food whatsoever. But most of us have been highly influenced by media propaganda, and we forget that all food advertisements are paid for by someone, usually a huge corporation who wants you to believe what they are telling you, so you will buy their products. That's one reason there is so much confusion about food. There are so many conflicting messages. One day tofu is good for us, another day it's deadly. If you go by some of the common sense practices I've laid out, you'll be able to make informed decisions regardless of the latest media publicized food craze. Bashar says we need to set up an environment within our bodies that is conducive to health, and he lists six components that are necessary for this to happen. oxygen, hydration, exercise, stress reduction, cleansing of the system, a lighter, simple diet consisting of fruits, vegetables, seeds, nuts, and grains. Well, Joe, I hope this answers your question and gives you a solid starting point to do more research on your own. Now is the time to question your beliefs, your principles, and the reasons for the choices you make so you aren't living according to the dictates of someone else's agenda. It's time to stop ingesting the things that don't serve you. And you know what? Just by asking this question, I know you are on the way to truth and clarity. So thank you very much for allowing me to share the story of food with our audience. We are going to take an itsy-bitsy break. And when we return, Caitlin Trepanier will be joining us. Caitlin helps individuals and groups learn the value of respect through speaking engagements and the books and plays she's written. She created a global initiative in order to raise the standard of living and quality of life for all people. It's called Connecting the Dots with the Respect Principle. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you have questions about love, life, relationships, happiness, health, and well-being, please email them to me at nancy@nancyatnoon.com, and maybe yours will be the ones chosen to be answered on air. If you need answers now, I provide a personal and private email consultation service. For details, please visit the Ask Nancy page on my website, nancyatnoon.com. And now it's time for another Daily Ditty.
Hi, Rob Ragazine here. Today we're talking about relationships and how important they are for your overall well-being. And Harvard researcher Nicholas Christakis says, each additional happy person in your social network, we're talking about real live networks, not Twitter or Facebook, makes you happier. And he says, imagine that I am connected to you and you are connected to others and others are connected to still others. It is this fabric of humanity, like an American patch quilt. Each person sits on a different colored patch. Imagine that these patches are happy and unhappy patches. Your happiness depends on what's going on in the patches around you. And the results from his work make it clear that the happier you are, the happier that those connected to you still will be. The more you dedicate your life to discovering your true purpose, the more you'll help yourself, and the people that are connected to you will be happy as well. Gradually, as you become more conscious and alive, the whole world can become slowly more awake, alive, confident, and connected. Join me on my show, Signs and Symbols, each week as we discover more about ourselves and how to stay happy, healthy, and whole.
We are back. Welcome to the show, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Nancy.
I am really grateful that you're here today to talk to us about respect and what that means for you. I mean, I know it's really important. So let's start by talking about what respect means to you. And like, does it mean doing what your parents or your teachers or your governmental leaders say just because they say to do it?
I think we're taught a lot of how to do that. But I think the concept what I'm looking at is going deeper into that and looking at to what the word actually means itself when you look at the synonyms and the definitions. And it means to value and to esteem. There's a lot of positive meanings that it has. And when you go deeper into a word or a subject, then you find out how you can better use it to apply to your life. It's being thrown around a lot. And quite often people mistake the word admire to have the same meaning as respect, but they are actually very different in expressions and what they actually mean.
So what does respect mean to you?
It means to me that you value everybody and everything. And actually in connecting the dots with the respect principle, I have what I call the respect scale. And it reveals where we are in terms of how we value things. We certainly may value, you know, our family more than we value people down the road or people in another country. But as your respect level rises, you're able to value, respect people that you don't know. And it's a matter of looking at something more from a holistic standpoint, that we are all people and it's not a matter of approving or agreeing with or liking. but it's a matter of your life, I'm a life. This is what respect is. And the higher you go up on the scale, the more you're able to be more compassionate, more tolerant, more accepting, and more loving.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. And I think that this is a really important life skill. I'm wondering, how do we develop it? I mean, if you don't have it or you don't have enough of it, obviously it's, you know, there are people in the world, even within ourselves, that we're not respectful enough. So how do we develop this?
I found what made a significant difference for me, because I had a very low respect level based on experiences I had and being a very different personality type from the majority. I experienced a lot of problems when I was younger and even throughout my life. In between, when I wasn't trying to be impress people and please people, when I tried to be myself because I was had a low respect level, I was sarcastic and, you know, I could be hurtful and judgmental and all that type of thing. And as I developed a higher level of awareness of what respect meant and how little I had, and as I worked on it for myself, and it came through just education and raising my self-awareness and learning from others. I mean, I studied a lot of people that I greatly admire for their high level of respect. Jesus Christ all the way to, you know, Mother Teresa, Gandhi, people who exemplified a high level of respect, not just for themselves, because when you have it not just for yourself, you also have it for others. And I found as my own level of respect went up, then I have become more tolerant, less judgmental. I'm not where I want to be. But I didn't realize how I was so caught up in my pain and the self-centeredness that radiated from that. And it, as much as I had a good heart and wanted to be good to people, my lack of trust and my brokenness got in the way of that. And as I've worked to want to be highly respectful of everybody, that has transformed me by just making the effort to raise my awareness and to look at other people and how they've done it.
I totally agree with all those points. And we can't really have respect for others unless and until we have respect for ourselves. You know, what we perceive to be outside ourselves is really just a mirror of the beliefs we hold within. So how does one develop respect for oneself if, you know, if we start off with low self-esteem? Like what were your steps?
The steps included looking to people that I admired, not respected, but that I admired, that I found their lives an epitome of what I wanted to achieve in myself. And I started to study them. And that was where part of it came in. I was motivated by wanting to be different, and I wanted to create different results for myself. So I looked to people that I wanted to model after. And then from there, then I started studying a little bit about, you know, psychology and philosophy and history, and even going back and looking through humanity's history, that we keep repeating the same thing, because if we don't continue to kind of grow and evolve, we keep doing the same patterns over again. And psychology certainly shows that, as well as history, that what we need to do is just like breaking an old habit. It's, you know, you're breaking your low respect level and creating a new one. Whether you quit smoking, get into running, or whatever it is that you need to do, you want to get better, you want to grow, you want to get better. So it's the same thing. You use the same tools. You look at, okay, where am I now and where do I want to be? And then look for different ways and different people who will motivate you to get you there. I mean, some people look to Oprah Winfrey in the sense that not only is she wealthy, but, you know, she's a very giving person. Some people look more to wizards such as in Google and Facebook, and it doesn't matter if you're the people you admire have higher respect level qualities, then as you study them, you become aware of where you can make some changes to get closer to the ideal that you want to get to.
How has your outside circumstances or your environment or the way people treat you, how has that changed from before you started to develop your self-respect and respect for others?
Because I didn't know how to handle a lot of stuff before, because of my low respect level, I was very defensive, reactionary, took too much, far too personally. And I overall didn't respond as well as I could to the world around me. And I have found a significant difference in, you know, if somebody's having a bad day, I don't let their bad day color my day. I mean, I have empathy for them. I have, you know, I certainly have a higher level of compassion for what they might be going through, but I no longer take on the weight of the world, so which is therefore making me more capable of fully realizing my own potential.
And this came about because you developed more self-respect within yourself.
Definitely. For a while, because of the brokenness, I became ego-driven, and ego tends to operate on being highly competitive and wanting to be the best, but not necessarily for the right reasons. What made the difference with a higher respect level was I just wanted to be me and the best me that I could be. So it eliminated a lot of the outward energy that I didn't have to focus on. I'm not in competition with anybody else. I'm competing with myself to be who I want to be.
You wrote a couple of things that I made note of. Three statements, actually. When a person feels valued, she takes better care of herself, and they are inspired to develop their full potential, and also that people who respect themselves value and respect others, thus reducing the problems manifested by the low respect level mentality. Those aren't exactly what you wrote, but yep. Those are the concepts of what you were saying. So I think one of the most important things, well, they're all very important. All three of those are super important. You take better care of yourself. That's huge.
It has huge implications. I mean, when you look at it from all different levels, whether you look at it from a financial perspective, healthcare in terms of bad habits, how you convert them to, you know, you make better choices for your food, for your exercise, for learning how to handle stress. And, you know, again, you learn how to handle it because you realize you don't have to take on everybody's stuff, but you can be there for them. Financially, you become more responsible. You know, you get away from a lot of the habits that people develop, spending money to try to fill a void that can't possibly be filled by spending money.
Yes, and something very important, what you said, going back to your example of when you could walk into a room and somebody would be having a bad day and you would take that on, whereas now you don't take that on. So it's really about emotional care, mental and emotional care as well. I mean, how many of us get infected, basically, by somebody else's bad mood? And if we can even just that one point, just that one reason alone, if we develop the sense of respect for ourselves, just so that we're not picking up somebody else's bad day, that's a major start, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And ironically, as my respect level has grown as well, it's empowered me to make the emotional choices, the financial choices, the relationship choices, but also the spiritual choice, you know, the willingness to be able to stay open to learning and new possibilities and fresh perspective is the thing that results from the higher your respect level goes, the more you are willing to realize your potential. But in order to do that, you have to be willing to let go of the old ideas that you had and to embrace new ideas and to fit them into who you are now.
Yes, realize our potential. Realize, I think everybody wants to live their full potential and they don't quite know how. And this is one really good life skill to start somebody on that path. And I really want to thank you, Caitlin, for taking the time to share this information with our audience today. I really feel that respect is a very misunderstood life skill, and I think it's a crucial skill that everyone needs to develop. And if you, my audience, want to bring more respect into your home and your family life or to your office or work setting, Caitlin's book, Connecting the Dots with the Respect Principle, is available as an ebook on Smashwords and will be available in hard copy in the new year. And Caitlin lives in my town, Kincardine, Ontario. And here in Kincardine, like most other places, we have many service clubs such as the Lions Club, Rotary Club, Women in Business, churches, who are, I'm sure, would love to have you speak at their meetings. So Caitlin, if someone wants to engage you to speak to their group or their school or organization, how can they reach you?
One of the easiest ways to reach me is if they go to the blog, The Respect Principle. There's a contact form on there that gives them the information about who I am and how I can proceed from there. And they could also give me a call, 226-881-2247.
Excellent. Thank you, Caitlin, for joining us today and sharing your journey with our audience. As Caitlin mentioned, self-esteem is a key factor in being able to develop a sense of respect for ourselves, others, and the world around us. And it just so happens I'm giving away a free ebook called 24 Strategies to Dramatically Increase Your Self-Esteem, written by moi. All you have to do is scroll to the bottom of the first page of my website, nancyatnoon.com, and sign up for the newsletter. And shazam, it will be delivered to your inbox instantly. So easy. The book is super simple to read. It's not going to take you a lot of time. I laid out the 24 strategies in a clear and concise manner. You can pick and choose the ones that resonate with you or implement all 24 strategies into your life and become an amazingly confident individual with strong self-worth. Everyone is attracted to people who radiate confidence. Alrighty-o, that's our show for today, folks. Catch us again next week. In the meantime, be sure to send me your questions. I really do want to hear from you.
Thanks for joining us again on Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. We've enjoyed your company and hope it's been fun for you too. If you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends and family because, well, they might like us too. You can find us online at nancyatnoon.com. We've got fascinating blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, coaching programs, art, jewelry, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Go ahead and check us out. nancyatnoon.com. You'll be glad you did.